We'll take our Bibles and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes again this morning. And I wanted to explain a couple things with our Sunday school offering before we get into the lesson. I had mentioned that we were saving up some money to try to help them with a translation system or setup where they would be able to translate the preaching from, have a translator speak to those that listen, only understand Spanish. And that, the total cost on that was like $1,360 or $1,330. And so we have paid for that completely. But the reason there is $750 still there is because Pastor Dameron was intending to use some other missions money to help with that. And since it all came out of there and the ticket for Aldo had not come out of there yet, other missions money paid for Aldo's ticket and we paid for the whole translation system. So our balance is $750, and the current project to help with the intern and the VBS. Now, the reason that we need some help with that is because Pastor Whitaker is kind of going to do a little building construction project in his house. Not huge, but it will take some money for materials and stuff so that there is a couple entrances into the house, and one of those entrances will be able to be so the intern can come in and not disrupt the rest of the family and whatever type of thing, be a little somewhat private little apartment. I don't know if it will be completely private. I can't remember I've been in the house. I can't remember all the plans for it. But they've got to do some work so that there's a little separation so that Josh isn't right there in the middle of their family all the time. So, and it seems like, as we've been thinking as pastoral staff, that the idea of an intern, we will do this more than just this summer. So having an apartment like that seems like a good thing to do. So some of the money will be spent toward materials to help with that. And Pastor Dameron wants to help them with, you know, one extra mouth to feed for the whole summer, and then also materials for their VBS. Pastor Whitaker was here for 15 years, and the VBS is going to have some promotion materials and all that, 5 days of whatever. So that money, $1,000, probably won't be enough to pay for. Well, for the VBS, they borrow, rent, whatever, extra vehicles too. And it's not the rent of the vehicles or using the vehicles, it's the fuel that really costs a lot. So between fuel, materials for VBS, extra food for Josh's mouth, and a little materials to separate his living quarters, that $1,000 will go quickly. But just wanted to give you an update on what we're doing with the money that we collect through the Sunday school offering. All right, let's then look at Ecclesiastes. And I might say this every week because it just is impressed upon me as I study it. I might not. But I want to start by just reminding us, myself included, or that I've been reminded as I've been studying this week, that Ecclesiastes is in the books of poetry. And if you've read poetry much, and I haven't, poetry isn't as straightforward as doctrine and teaching. If you were going to write a letter to somebody, some people write in poetry, but most of the time you just get right down to business and write what you want to say. But in poetry it's different. It's a different form of literature, and so it's not clear at first, or it might not be clear at first, and definitely Ecclesiastes is not clear at first. And that's why I would say it's not, and the poetry is not straightforward teaching. We're going to see this as we develop the lessons through the summer. But I would say that's one of the reasons I encourage you to try to, at least once during the week or twice, sit down and read the whole book at once. Because if you read just a section, you're not getting the whole picture. And it is, I don't think that I'm a real fast reader. I know I'm not a super slow reader, but I verbalize when I read even silently, and that means that you're a slower reader, at least is what I've been told as I've studied education some. So it took me, I looked at my watch, it took me 26 minutes to read the book of Ecclesiastes one of the times I was reading it this week. So I'm encourage you, even if it takes you 35 minutes or 40 minutes, that's not a real long time once a week, to at least read through and get the whole picture from beginning to end. Because as we'll see, the preacher's text this morning is... I have to also, as I give these lessons, recognize that not everyone is going to be here. You're not like, this is not a college class that you're going to get docked if you're absent any of the 11 or 12 weeks that we go through it. So we have to kind of put this in its total context every single week as much as we can. But it will make more sense for those of you that can be here through the whole thing. As we get toward the end, it will begin to make more sense than it will in the beginning. So, anyway, so an encouragement to try to read the book through at least once a week. That way you continue to have the whole context, at least in your fairly recent memory as we go through it. And then also to bear with me and to work with me to understand what is going on, even though it's coming across to us in poetic language and not just straightforward doctrine like the epistle of Paul to the Romans or something like that. As we get into this lesson, I want you to ask you a question. What is in your mind, or what comes to your mind, each of you, what comes to your mind when I say this, when I ask this question, which is the greatest generation? Which is the greatest generation? Let's just go ahead and take some. John wants to offer what he thinks is what's the greatest generation? The World War II generation. How many of you, that's the one that came to mind when I asked the question? Of course, it helps that somebody wrote a book that told us they were the greatest generation. Okay. Do anybody think, well, maybe that's not the greatest generation? Ryan? Okay, I think that's what comes to my mind, and I can't remember if I said that in Sunday school here or not, but in my mind, the founding fathers, they gave us a whole lot more than the World War II generation did. And of course, the youngest generation around here, the ones that are just coming of age, it would be typical that they think that they are the greatest generation, right? So just as we think, the idea of generations is going to come up in the preacher's text, and I want us to remember this idea, the idea of a generation and why it's great or what we think about it. So let's read his text. This morning, last week we took an overview just and really didn't dig into all of the text of the Ecclesiastes, but an overview of the book to try to give us some context for it. And this week we're going to just look at the preacher's text. And then we're going to see if my study proves correct that he's going to try to support his point or develop his point through four major sections, and then he'll draw us to a conclusion. At the end of each of those sections, he comes to a conclusion also, but then he will recapitulate the whole thing at the end. So this morning, just the text, and as we said last week, this is an inductive type sermon, so he's not starting with his point, he's starting with his situation. He's starting with the way things are and going to lead us to a point, rather than starting with his point and saying this is why this is true. So his text, the preacher's text, is Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 2 through 11. We'll go ahead and read verse 1 just to remind us that it's the preacher that is saying this. The words of the preacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to the place where he arose. The wind goes toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. So, the preacher's text kind of, he looks around at life, the way things are, and he says everything here in this world, basically says everything here in this world offers just emptiness and futility. If you think that, if you look at the things that he mentions here, those are things that we would consider to be fulfilling, and they're not. Even the laws of Moses teach that there should be prosperity for those that are faithful. Moses said, if you worship God, God will bless you. He will rain on your land. I preached about that a week or two ago in our Sunday evening service, that there would be prosperity with faithfulness. And the laws of Moses teach punishment for the wicked. If you're wicked, he will withhold the rain. He'll send problems into your life. The New Testament teaches us, you reap what you sow. And that is all true. But what is the sum? If we're just looking around at where we are, what is the sum of what we have? He asks this question, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? Here we are, we're living in this world, and we work, and we know we reap what we sow, but at the end of it, what will you have? At the end of it, what will you have? You have profit. What kind of profit? Will you have money? Will you have more money at the end than you had at the beginning? Will you have more land at the end than you had at the beginning? Will you have more honor, more prestige, more influence? You say, well, I'm building up these things. But when you die, what will you do with all that money? What will you do with all that land? How much influence will you have while you're laying there in the casket? How much honor and prestige will you have? At the end of our life, what will we have? See, and a generation is just the sum of a person of many people's lives. We said, what's the greatest generation? Some people say the World War II generation. Why? Because so many of those people had certain characteristics, and they combine together to present us with a characteristic of a certain generation that makes them great. Okay? And whether it's that generation or who knows, the 1920s generation, the current generation, our founding fathers' generation, what if we went even before that? I mean, what about whatever generation? The generation is a compilation, or it's the summation of all the people's lives there, and you add those together. But the truth is, pretty soon, not even the current generation will think that the greatest generation is the greatest generation. Because there's a few of us that think that the founding fathers is the greatest generation. There's a bunch of us that think that the World War II generation is the greatest generation. But in 50 years, how many are going to remember the World War II generation? Okay, now I'm saying this on purpose, and I've hinted toward it, And I guess I have it later, but I'm going to hit it now because my brain is swirling. What's so significant about December 7th, 1941? Okay. When I put the year on it, most of you say, oh yeah, I know. But how many times have you come to December 7th and you got all the way through the end of the day? Or how many times have you come to December 8th and said, oh, yeah, yesterday was December 7th. Or you're driving along on December 7th and you see one lonely institution of business that has a flag at half mast, and you think, what a lazy guy, he only put the flag up halfway. And then, it's Pearl Harbor Day. If you drive into Chicago, there's this great big factory that has December 7th, September 11th, we will never forget. Yeah, right. We forget. One generation passes away and another generation comes. As much as we want to say that people are great and something is great, it fades. It passes away. And the next one comes. When the sun sets on our life, this life here, what will you have here? Nothing. Will you come back to use and enjoy the things that you had? No, you won't. But just to turn the knife a little bit, the earth abides forever. One generation passes away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goes down. Okay? He's making a comparison. We arise and we come to glory, and then our life sets and it goes away and it never comes back. But the sun arises and it comes to glory and it sets, and what is it? It gets to come back again. It comes back. It hastes to the place where he rose. It's interesting, the word picture here. The sun is coming up and it makes its way through there and it sets into the ocean and then it hurries across the backside of the earth to get to where it's going to come up again. But the sun comes back. It's just the sun. The wind goes toward the north. Goes toward the south and turns about to the north. It whirleth about continually. Now there's, just to let you know, as far as the language is concerned, the sun and the wind there are seem to be, that they can be connected in the language. And so you could think either of these or both of these. The sun comes up and goes down, and now I'm in front of people and can't remember. It comes up in the east and goes down in the west, I think. Is that right? Okay, thank you. But then the sun also heads toward the south and it heads toward the north. Through the course of the year, doesn't it? Each day it goes east to west, but through the course of the year it will go up and down in its rotation around, in the earth's rotation around the sun. And so we have this season and it just keeps doing that. It's been doing that forever. Not forever. Since creation. The sun that we look at is the same sun that Adam looked at. Okay? Doesn't that make you mad? I mean, here we are, we're human beings. The sun is just the sun. I've got a brain. I'm more intelligent than this. The sun is just matter. I can do things with my life. I can invent things. I can influence people. I can do all of these things, and yet at the end of my life, there's nothing there, and there comes the sun. The sun is going to rise the day after I die. The sun is going to rise the day after you die. And I know we wouldn't live without it, but it's just the sun. It hasn't decreed anything, hardly. And nothing verbally, nothing in our language. The wind goes to the south and it returns around to the north and it swirls around wherever, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. To me, this reminds me of the weather. The wind and reminds me of the weather. We have today, they said on the radio that today is the first day of meteorological, which I'm assuming is weather-wise, summer. June 1st is the beginning of summer. And astronomical summer or solar summer would start June 21st. But it's not like we go through life and the wind does different things and things that has, it just continues. And I mean, we've had winter, spring, summer, fall, or if it was an agricultural calendar, we had the same calendar. It keeps going. And after we die, it's going to keep going. It goes on. It gives us another example. Beside the sun and the wind, the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. We understand that that happens through evaporation and the clouds and all. It's interesting. They thought that there was a system of, I think you'd call it subterranean channels. Because you go into the mountains and here's a spring of water coming out of the ground. And they felt like the river flowed into sea and there was like, you know how you have that little thing in your garden that it collects the water here and pumps it over here and then it comes. That's the way they felt that the waters went. And so that would be how waters returned to the place they are. Either way, the scriptures are still true. The waters flow into the sea, and then they return to the place from whence they came, and it keeps going. Our life doesn't keep going, but it does. The same sun, wind, and seas are here today that was here when Adam was here. Each runs its course and then returns to where it came from. But man, we run our course, and we're done. And really, are you smarter than a rippling brook? Are you of more value than the wind that blows through the windmill? And yet, they continue forever. And what do we have to show for our life? What profit do we have for our life? And then, he brings up another topic. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? And then he says, all things, these are connected, but I think it's kind of I see a little bit of a difference. All things are full of labor. All things are full of labor. So full, you can't even utter it. It's frustrating. You would think you could do a job and then it would be done. You would think you could dust the house and it would be done. Right? But is it done? No, you have to come back and do more. You have to do it again. It's full of labor. The eye is not satisfied with seeing. Now this is, you say, well, I'm satisfied. I've seen enough. I mean, you could say, well, I've seen enough. Okay, let's give you blindness. Will you be satisfied? Have you seen enough? No, you want to keep seeing. Neither is the ear filled with hearing. Have you heard enough? No, you want to keep hearing. There's no end to it. Life is labor. It's never-ending labor. The eye is not filled. The ear is not satisfied. Activity must be repeated. The thing that hath been, it is which shall be. You're going to keep doing it. You say, we work for a living. We need to work for a living. You'd think you could stop working sometime, that you'd finally have got it, but you can't. The thing that hath been is the thing that shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there's no new thing under the sun. Activity must be repeated. Even invention does not eliminate needs. Now, this is not trying to tell us that certain particular technology, you know, that they had iPhones that Solomon had an iPhone. It's not trying to tell us that. But let me ask you this question, and it will help us understand, I think, the point. Has the iPhone or has the latest, greatest technology, the newest thing, satisfied any need? I mean, here, this is going to answer all of your problems. If you have this, you must have this. Millions of people must wait in line all night long to get this. What are we? Tomorrow, They're going to talk, they're going to introduce probably the iPhone 6, I think. Is that right? Somebody? Nobody's going to say. iOS 8, iPhone 6, and we're all going to want to see, what are they going to say? 6, I thought the first one was going to answer all of our problems. See the point? There's nothing new. I mean, this, sure, it's new. It's got new features, but those features are going to leave us with the same, in a sense, empty feeling. It's not going to fulfill our needs. Invention doesn't eliminate needs. And then attainment, achievements, breakthroughs. The United States of America, the idea governmentally, is that new? We could argue that is, but all the elements of it had been around before. And as Christians, we really think that the structure of it is mostly in the scriptures, so it must have, you know, it's not new. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? No. It hath already been of old time, which was before us. Attainments, achievements, breakthroughs, whether they be in industry or society, they're forgotten. For example, our greatest generation. Which is it? Both of them are forgotten. If it's our founding fathers, we've forgotten them. We don't even know the things that they did. If it's the World War II generation, we're on our way to forgetting them. I have a hard enough time remembering. I'm 43. Okay, my nephews and nieces, I'm sure they haven't any clue what December 7th is about. If they have a good history teacher, when I say December 7th, 1941, they'll say, oh yeah, that was the start of World War II. They hardly even, I don't know if any of them even met my grandfather who fought in the Pacific Theater. Okay? That greatest generation is going to be forgotten. It's going to be gone. Achievements, attainments, breakthroughs will be lost. They might be learned again. They might be achieved again, but they're lost from one generation to another. There's no remembrance of former things, neither shall be there any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. You know what? His point here is that this is not good. This is not good. And I'm going to say this because as we proceed, I use that term not good because he's going to use the term what is good through the rest. So I'm setting us up to understand that this, what we look at, what we see, what we live in the middle of most all of our lives is not good. It's not a good way to live. It's not good things to live for. It's not good. So it's not good things to live for. How can we live good? We're going to look at that as we go through Ecclesiastes. And then, I know I'm a little over, but I'd like to finish. The New Testament's Greater Solomon tells us two things that I want to point out. Mark 8. We have a question here regarding profit. We had said what profit does man have? Mark 8:34. And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, whosoever shall come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world? What will it profit? Nothing, especially if he loses his own soul. Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? And then in Matthew 11, just to leave us with these things, Jesus addresses labor. Matthew 11, 28. Says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. This world is full of labor. It doesn't stop. It can be frustrating. You can say, haven't I done this before? And yes, and you're going to have to do it again. But you labor, come to Christ, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Let's pray.